listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is the Rocket, Bill Latson. Welcome to Newsmakers. Former Major Leaguer Torrey Hunter paid a visit to the show. I had a great conversation with the Twins' senior advisor. Bob Carpenter, the Nationals' play-by-play voice, is on the show. And then we have Richard Justice, who goes over the AL West and talks about the strengths and weaknesses of each club. We start with Hunter, who has a lot to say about the Twins. Enjoy the podcast. I got to tell you, it's an honor to have my next guest on the show here. Five-time All-Star, 9 Gold Gloves. Wow, what a career he had with the Minnesota Twins, Angels, and Tigers. His name is Torrey Hunter. Torrey, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah. You and Gary Matthews participated in a tournament for Urban Youth Academy yesterday in Compton, California. And how much money did you raise and how much fun did you have?
We raised close to $200,000. And we had a lot of fun, man. You know, a lot of guys came out. They had a lot of past and present players, and it came out and had a really good time. You know, a lot of times when the guys retire, they don't get a chance to get that clubhouse feeling anymore, that chemistry, camaraderie, that brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And I think these golf tournaments, you know, especially when you're trying to raise money for the Urban Youth Academy, something that's near and dear to our heart, giving these kids the opportunity to have the same chances that we had and better. And we're actually trying to make that better, give them a better opportunity. And these guys will go on to play college baseball, get their degree out of it, or either go and play Major League Baseball for, you know, 10 years. So it's good. This Urban Youth Academy golf initiative is actually pretty impressive. Just happy to have Reggie Jackson and Derek Lee and myself and Garrett Anderson, all these guys came about. Doug DeSensei came about, and we just had a good time. We laughed, we cracked jokes, but at the same time, it was a great cause.
Torrey, what is it about you, ever since you've been in the big leagues, you're always helping young kids? It doesn't matter who it is, Mike Trout, even the kids at the Urban Academy. What is it about kids you love to help?
Well, you know, if you're talking about Major League Baseball, these guys are driven and want to pursue their dreams, and they're chasing it, and they're getting things done. So it's kind of easy to motivate, the Mike Trouts and Howie Kendricks and Byron Buxton, Joe Mauers, all those guys. When they come up, they're talented, but yet they're all out for the same common goal. You know, one thing about that I really love is helping kids, whether it's food, shelter, and clothing, or just the game of any kind of sport, but the game of baseball for sure, because it teaches a lesson. You know, it teaches discipline. You know, you have to accept failure. You have to make adjustments in baseball, and I think you have to do that in life. And baseball, I think, teaches one of the greatest lessons, because you're not going to always – you can do everything right and still fail, and you have to – learn from it, and have that's your training is your failure. And I think these kids in baseball, they get a great training for life. You know, after baseball, most of the baseball players, they go out and they do pretty good things, man, because they know how to accept failure and make adjustments from it. So that's one thing. It did it for me, and I saw what guys before me, what they did for me, and I just kind of pass it on. Each one teach one. And that's something that is really, really something I really want to impart on a lot of guys.
Who's the mentor in your life that really helped you out?
Of course, Jesus Christ. I have to say that. But I definitely think that Paul Molitor, Kirby Puckett, Dave Winfield, all these guys have imparted in my career. I could say, Matt Lawton, guys you know, that played a little bit, made a small impact in the game. You might not know much about them, but these guys have helped me out a lot along the way as far as financial literacy, you know, how to carry myself in that clubhouse, off the field, just how to act and how to treat people. Harmon Killebrew helped me out a lot. So, you had a lot of guys that imparted in me. When I hear guys say, I did this all by myself, I always say, man, there's no way anybody in this world did anything by themselves, not just sports, corporate, anything. You can never say you did something by yourself. There's always been somebody there for you.
Also, Torrey Hunter Jr., you're really proud of him. He got his degree from Notre Dame, and now he's in the Angels minor league system. How's he doing? I know he had surgery before last season, but he really adjusted and doing well.
Well, yeah, I'm proud of all three of my boys, man. They all did their things, and, you know, Money left Arkansas State, and Darius is still in college doing his thing. But Torrey Jr., you know, he broke his leg coming out of his senior year, you know, broke his femur, actually, mm-hmm. and he bounced back from that. And you know, Torrey's been fighting since he was in the womb. He wasn't breathing, and, you know, when he was born, and they had to resuscitate him, and he fought through that, and then he's just been fighting his whole life and getting through it. And I'm proud of him because, you know, he's been through a lot, and he's fought through it. You talk about Notre Dame, IT management, got his degree in 3 years. And
great.
He also went into, you know, the Angels organization and learned a lot, you know, and had to get in a rhythm and get some ABs, some reps. And at the end of the season, you look at his batting average, he was hitting .352. I'm like, whoa. You know, I mean, he overcomes a lot, man. He's a fighter. He doesn't want anything given to him. You know, that's you know, you kind of teach your kid that. Hopefully a lot of men teach their kid that, you know, nobody's going to give you anything. You got to go out there and take everything. And the only way you can do that is make adjustments. And that's what he's been doing, you know, his whole life. And I think he's going to continue to do that and teach his children as well. So just try to break chains and start a new one, and that's what I try to do with my family.
That's great. You are a special advisor for the Twins, and I got to ask, why were they able to play meaningful games last year? I mean, a lot of people expected them to finish in last, and they ended up going to the postseason. What happened?
Man, you know, they lost 103 games last year, and the year before that, in 2015, when I was there, we won 83 games, and right. It seemed like everybody was going to be on the up and up, and they're going to grow from there, and they had a setback of 103 games. I think it kind of humbles you when you go from winning 83 games and having a chance to go to the postseason in 2015, and then you lose 103. It kind of humbles you. And these guys came back in 2017. It's such a talented group of guys. You know, Irvin Santana kind of led the way as far as the starting rotation. And all these young guys behind him just kind of fell in line. And then you talk about the bullpen. I think Brandon Kinsler had a lot to do with that in the beginning before he got traded.
Right.
And he helped those guys out. I know Eddie Rosario was in the bullpen helping those guys out. And I'd say James Rawson, as far as offensively, he stuck with a lot of guys. Guys will have any kind of struggles. They trust him. He has a simple way of communicating with the players, with the hitters. And I think offensively, a lot of these guys exceeded, you know, the expectations of 2017. They went out there grinding every day. You talk about Byron Buxton. You know, Brian Dozier, to me, really changed the offense. But Byron Buxton, he fought through some stuff. I mean, he struggled in the first half.
Right.
Second half, he was the hero. I mean, this guy has all the tools in the world. Defensively, he can help win a ball game defensively in itself. But he was able to put all of it together offensively in the second half, stealing bases, you know, scoring from home, making great defensive plays. And he went on to win a Gold Glove and his first Gold Glove this year, and they were able to go to the playoffs all because of resilience and fight that the whole team had this year. So I definitely think the resilience, the fight, to always wanting to make themselves better, I think that's why those guys had 85 wins and went on to the playoffs.
Why was Buxton able to turn it around the second half? It was excellent.
Well, Buxton started believing in his God-given ability. I think Buxton, you know, at first was trying to pull the ball. If you looked at his swing in the first 3 months, it was always coming around the ball and hitting it towards, you know, shortstop and third base. But he started trusting his swing, and he, after so many reps and working in the cage, and he could have folded and said, you know what, it's a rough year, I'm just going to wait till next year. But he didn't. He wanted to get this thing right this year. And I say in July, I think I remember him hitting 199 or 190 in July, July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the season, he got up to like 260. I think he finished the season 257 or 256.
Mm-hmm.
And so that lets you know that he put in some work. Second half, he hit well over 300. And he really banged because he was going towards right center. As a righty, your mindset has to be right center so you won't lose your bat head. You can stay on every pitch if you think right center. And I think Buxton put in so much work, and he started going to right center, and he stayed on the ball more and had more base hits and drove the ball more, hit for power right center. So this guy's a threat. And I definitely think his future is very, very bright.
I tell you, defensively, he is out of this world. I mean, it seems like he gets to every ball, and it's not a surprise he won the Gold Glove, like you said. But talk about his defense. I mean, I've never seen anything like this guy. It seems like he's banging into walls and always making catches. Talk about him.
Well, you know, you rarely see anybody with that kind of speed. I mean, dude, he can fly. And it's like he was born to be a center fielder. I mean, in all my years, you know, my eyes, I still think, you know, right now I'm looking at him, he could be one of the best in the game, you know, for a long time. And right now he's the best center fielder in the game. So if he stays healthy, which is the key, and which I'm trying to work on, hey, man, we're going to try to work on running to the wall, but it's a way you can run into a wall without getting hurt.
Right.
He's running to the wall like full speed.
Right.
So it's stuff that we can work on if he's open to it, which I know he is. He's always been open. He always wants to make himself better. I definitely think that he's going to stay on the field, stay healthy, and he's going to be the best center fielder to ever play the game if he stays healthy.
Right. I agree with you. Paul Molitor, he won Manager of the Year. You must be happy for him. He was emotional yesterday after he won the award, and he deserved it, no question.
I was with Paul Molitor at the Rollins Gold Glove Award.
Yes.
Dinner. And he was sitting at the table with me, and I told him, I said, man, you're going to win it. You know, you don't lose 103 games the previous year and then win 85 and get to the postseason with still one of the youngest teams that was in the postseason. And I said, there's no way you don't get this. And we kind of thought about it. We talked about it. And we said, all right, maybe Terry Francona, but I think they should give you serious consideration. And he was just kind of like, I don't know. It doesn't matter. We had a great season, da-da-da. And to see that yesterday and to see him get the award, like I said, he's one of the guys. He was my teammate in 1998.
Right.
He was my bench coach in 2001. And then he was my manager in 2015. So I had him in every area of baseball, you know, as a teammate, a coach. And as a manager, and so just to see him get that award, I know this guy personally, and I think he's well deserved. He's one of the nicest guys in baseball. The young guys respect him; they love him. They know he's a Hall of Famer. So anytime he says anything, you have to listen.
Right.
You know, you don't have to say it works for you, but you have to at least give him that attention because he is a Hall of Famer, and he's been where you're trying to go. So I definitely think that is well-deserved of Molitor.
You know, I've learned about you. I learned that you are a hero to really young people. I understand that you are a hero to George Springer of the Astros, that you've known him since he was a little kid. And can you talk about that meeting and how surprised that he became a World Series MVP?
Man, it's this guy... We were in Double A. This was 1997, and I was in Double A in New Britain, Connecticut. I'm like 21 years old, and playing in New Britain, Connecticut, in Double A minor leagues. And I would see this kid in the stands, and he would leave school. I guess he stayed around the corner from the stadium, close to the stadium. So he would come to the stadium while we're taking batting practice, and I would throw the ball to him every once in a while. I see him, and I throw a ball to him. You see a little black kid in the stands. He's like, wow, you know, it's not too many African-American kids in the stands. So I throw the ball to him, and he threw the ball back, and I'm like, wow, strong arm. And I would see him, and then I got called up, and I didn't see him anymore. So throughout the years, you know, 2000, 2003, 2005, every once in a while driving down the street, I was like, I wonder what happened to this kid. You know, you wonder what happened. Did he go on to be a doctor? Did he go on to be a lawyer? Did he get his degree? You know, you want to think positive things. And so I wanted to know where he was, but then it'll go away. You know, life keeps going, And then in 2013, Bo Porter, he was the manager with the Houston Astros, and right. Bo Porter said, hey, I have a kid. He's our first-round pick. He wants to meet you. He's like, he idolizes you, and he reminds me of you the way you play the game. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I want to meet him. So I was with the Tigers at the time in 2013. We were in Lakeland playing the Astros, and I walked up to him, and he said, hi, I'm George Springer. I'm the kid you played catch with in the stands in New Britain, Connecticut. I'm like, what? I could not believe it. I was like, oh, my God. And he said, man, I've been wanting to talk to you, you know, since then. You inspired me to play baseball, da 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 da. I'm like, wow, that's cool, man. You know, it's good to hear because you never know who you are inspiring. You know, me as a youngster, all I did was watch Kirby Puckett. I watched Paul Mollett. I watched these guys and see what they were doing because they had so much success, and I want to go where they've been. And I knew that guys were watching me, but I just didn't. I never had an experience like this where a kid grows up and be a Major League Baseball player, and all he says is he tell everybody that I inspired him. So it was a great feeling that that can happen, and that's making the world better.
Yes.
And that's inspiring, that's multiplying, and that's what I like to do.
What do you do in your role as a special assistant? I know you help the kids quite a bit, and what else do you do?
Oh, man, I go, like, to A-ball and double-A, all the minor league affiliates, and I would go down there just to kind of talk to the guys. And when you go in that clubhouse, they say, oh, man, that's Torrey. This guy has been to the major leagues, and, you know, I want to get there one day. So guess what? I'm in the batting cage for 5 hours and working these guys out because they have different guys. They want to know something. What you see in my swing, let's talk about this. You know, I talk to the guys about everything pretty much, financial literacy, about life, about their wives, about anything, and I'm there for them. And that's what I try to do. I try to give back and help with the development side of the Minnesota Twins and try to implement the things that we're trying to do, implement that season. So I talk to the coaches if they want to have a conversation about different situations. And then I go to the major leagues and do my thing. I'm in there with in the draft.
Oh,
you know,
no
kidding. I was in the draft this year, 7 hours a day, 8 hours a day. That was pretty impressive. That war room is for real. I'm on the playing side all my whole career, and I get on this side. It's like these guys hatch it out, and so I was able to experience that, the trade deadline, and you know different things, and it was pretty cool, man. The whole process to know what's going on behind the scenes and to be a part of it. I really liked it.
Do you want to be a general manager one day?
To be a GM. Do I want to be a GM?
Yes.
That's up in the air. I don't know if I want to be, but if I had to be, I'd do it, and I'd do it well. You know, and nobody's as good as the second man. You know, they don't write a story about number two.
Yeah.
Number two is the most powerful guy in the world.
Right.
So it's all about who you put around you and have around you. And if I did become the GM, definitely – I would have somebody special behind me.
I hear you. Hey, final question. I want to talk to you about David Ortiz. You know, people forget that he started with the Minnesota Twins, and you were a close friend of his. And
yeah.
Talk about what was it like to play with David Ortiz. And he struggled in Minnesota.
Oh, man, he struggled a lot. You know, I think it was for him, it was more mental.
Mm-hmm.
I think he let Tom Kelly get in his head every once in a while. Because TK wanted us to always go, like for me, I'm right-handed, I had to go to right field, you know, and David Ortiz, he had to go to left field. And if you didn't do those things, you didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
So we forced ourselves to go the other way, and sometimes you sacrifice a lot of power and a lot of athletic ability trying to be, we call it one-way Motorola. You can't be one way because it kills your athletic ability. But we just didn't know what TK was talking about, because in the long run, it actually helps us. It gives us longevity of staying on the ball and able to hit the ball to all parts of the field, and that's all TK was trying to say. But David struggled for a long time, and then when we released him,
mm-hmm.
and David gave me a phone call after we released him and designated him. He called me. He's like, what happened? In 2002, David Ortiz actually – He hit like 270 plus, 23 home runs, 21 home runs, 70-something RBIs, and he missed 8 weeks of the season. This guy was very vital for us to go to the ALCS and play the Angels, mm-hmm. and they went on to win the World Series. And we was one of the youngest teams in baseball, and we were able to go to the ALCS because of him. And he put up good numbers, and he played well, hit the ball well, and went on to Boston. And that Green Monster, he was able to kill that Green Monster because he knew how to go the opposite way.
Right.
So I definitely think his career took off when he went to Boston because he already knew how to hit the other way, and that's where you can go to get that average up in Fenway. And I think that field was built special for David, and he just went on and got all the confidence in the world, and now he can hit. He's one of the best designated hitters we've ever seen, if not the best. So I'm proud of him, man. I've seen where he came from, where he come from, and I've seen him grow. And I've seen him grow as a person. I've seen him grow as a baseball player. And he's everything that comes to him is well-deserved. I've seen him fight.
And you think he's a Hall of Famer?
I definitely think he's a Hall of Famer. You know, if they let a DH in there, he should be the first one to go in there.
Oh, I agree.
So I definitely think he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, you just don't win that many. What did he win? Three rings, and he was very pivotal for all those rings. He actually went out there and had some clutch home runs, clutch hits, game-winning homers. I mean, this guy is one of the best playoff hitters in our history. So why not?
Yes, no doubt. Torrey Hunter, listen, I had a blast. I can talk to you forever. Thank you so much for everything.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Appreciate that, man. Take care.
Take care. My next guest is broadcaster Bob Carpenter, and he gives his opinions on the Nationals. On the phone is Bob Carpenter. He's one of the broadcasters for the Nationals. Bob, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, Bill, good to be on with you.
Bob, the Nationals have a new manager, new coaching staff. Does that make a difference when it comes to getting out of the first round of the playoffs?
That's a great question. I guess a year from now we'll know the answer to that. You know, Bill, it's got to be one of the great mysteries in baseball, how the Nats, with such good teams, could four times be in the playoffs as a pretty decisive division champion, and then all four of those times not get through the first round. I can't think of anything in baseball from a team standpoint that is more intriguing, more confusing, and a question harder to answer than that. And I guess it remains to be seen. I mean, we're not talking about a manager who's been there, done that as a big league skipper. Mm-hmm. We are talking about a new manager, Dave Martinez, who's done that as a bench coach to Joe Maddon, because really the first time the Cubs made the playoffs a couple years ago, they made the step that the Nationals could not make when they at least won the division series, you know, got knocked out in the LCS. Then the following year, they do make the World Series. They win the thing. And then this year, they win another series before they get knocked out. So at least they have, you know, that they can claim. And Dave Martinez is a part of that. So whether he can bring that to D.C. or not remains to be seen. But it's a heck of a question, and I can't wait to see the answer.
You know, I thought of all the division winners that they had, I thought 2014 and 2017 were their best teams. And what did you think? I thought those two teams were going to go far.
Yeah, I think those are the two clubs, I agree with you, that went in with maybe the fewest questions, you know, injury-wise, all that. Although, you know, Steven Strasburg really didn't have much of a playoff presence until this year. But, you know, and he was fantastic in that game in Chicago, just fantastic.
Right.
But, I think you can look back on all four of these teams, really, and say those are really good ball clubs. But I think this year's version, even without Adam Eaton, the way the Nats had guys that would step in. And, you know, Bill, you've watched baseball a long time like I have. When you have a season where key guys get hurt and then other guys jump up and do the job, like Michael A. Taylor, Brian Goodwin, Wilmer Defoe, filling in for Trey Turner.
Right.
Usually when you have a season like that and some unexpected guys, and this would maybe include Adam Lind off the bench, not really a bench guy per se, but in that particular role with the Nationals, he came off the bench and did amazing things. When you see a season where those kind of things happen, you think it's your year. You think it's a special year. And with all those things happening, the Nationals, of course, made it to the division championship again, but they just couldn't get over that first-round hump in the playoffs. So, you know, the way starters are handling pitchers and everything in postseason the last 2 years, and the way starters are going four innings and getting pulled, and Max Scherzer comes out of a game when he's basically given up next to nothing in Chicago.
Right.
The whole October thing, to me, has turned into more of a crapshoot than I've ever seen it before. It seems like all conventional baseball strategy and wisdom sort of goes out the window, and you do whatever you can every single day to win, and you don't worry about the game coming up after that. So, you know, this whole thing is hard to put a finger on,
right,
hard to quantify because of the way postseason is being handled right now, in my opinion, by a whole bunch of really good established major league managers.
Do you think, in retrospect, that Dusty Baker made mistakes during that division series? I just think not knowing the rules, I think a lot of things, a lot of changes he made, not using Tanner Roark was a mistake. What do you think?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not going to sit here and bash Dusty because the guy won 97 games and he got the Nats two consecutive division titles, which no manager has done, you know, in the history of our ball club, even though it's not that long of a history. But, you know, bringing in Sammy Solis for Max Scherzer in that game in Chicago, that was a bit of a head-scratcher for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you figure if you're going to pull Max Scherzer out, you got one of your veteran guys behind him, and that was an odd sequence to me. The two things that jump out over the years are Davey Johnson pitching to Pete Cosma with a pitcher on deck in 12.
Yes.
We all know how that worked out.
Yes.
And then Dusty taking Max Scherzer out this past postseason. You know, those are just two things that kind of jump out at me. But, you know, hey, Dusty, he'll forget more about baseball than most of us put together will ever know. It's hard for me to criticize a manager because I don't know exactly what's going through his mind at that time. Of course, FP and I weren't even broadcasting those games. You know, we're sitting up in the press box in Chicago, kind of like, you know, beat writers or, to a certain extent, fans
right,
watching this thing and maybe having a little bit more of an emotional reaction, you know, to that than we would had we were, been actually broadcasting the game. So, you know, that was an odd situation for us. And but that is something that sticks in my craw a little bit about, you know, you got your ace on the mound and out he comes and in comes an unproven, you know, part-time second or third-year guy who doesn't get the job, then you got a big problem on your hands.
Right. Going to the offseason, you know, it looks like the Nationals don't need to fix much, but what do you think is their biggest needs?
Well, Adam Eaton getting healthy I think will be fantastic. The outfield of Eaton, Taylor, and Harper really gets me going. Brian Goodwin would be a good fourth guy out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then what do you do with Victor Robles? Where does he fit in? How much does he play?
That guy can play.
I mean, the guy can play anywhere. He can play all three spots. I don't know if he knows how to pinch hit yet.
Mm-hmm.
We know he can run like the wind, great pinch runner. Asking a young guy to pinch hit and get on base, if he's not an everyday player, that's a very difficult thing to do. And would he be better off playing every day in the minor leagues rather than trying to, you know, fulfill a role like that? So to me, getting Adam Eaton back healthy, and he certainly, every time I saw him, looked like he was ready and willing and certainly able, we hope, to be the everyday guy out there. And I guess the fifth starter thing's being addressed. I've even read a couple of days ago about Jordan Zimmermann, his name out there as a possibility to possibly come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the time, Bill, and maybe it's a little more difficult now after the trade the Nationals made with the White Sox last year. Who's going to step up from the minor leagues to show that, hey, we've got an organization guy who's not going to cost us $5 or $10 million a year, who can step into that number five spot and be at least a 500 big league pitcher or better, because it looks like quite a while until Joe Ross is going to be available. So, you know, who's going to step up? Already have to go outside the organization and bring in a number five starter, and that's not going to be cheap. So I think that's a big thing. And then, of course, the bullpen, the back end of the bullpen, you know, Doolittle and Madsen I think are fine. And, you know, that's innings number 8 and 9. Does Brandon Kinstler possibly come back? You know, what's up with Matt Albers, who is probably the most consistent guy out there all year? So I think there are a number of questions, but I don't think any of them are major season breaker type things, because I think Mike Rizzo, you know, he'll have to revamp the bench, of course.
Yes.
Because Adam Lynn's not going to be a part-time player.
Right.
And he's gonna you know, do well wherever he goes. But, you know, there are big decisions to make, but I don't think any of them are deal breakers or season breakers. This ball club still, with the state of the rest of the division, without making a single move during the offseason, is still by far the best team in the National League East.
I totally agree with you. But what about behind the plate? I thought Matt Wieters was awful last year, and Lobatone, his backup, wasn't that good either. So do you think Wieters will rebound?
Well, I think he will. I hope he does, because I think he's making over $10 million a year. I don't want to boil it down to, you know, hey, this guy's making this much money, so he should produce. But everybody tells me baseball's a business, and you know, you're supposed to get a return on your investment. I got to know Matt. I think he's a terrific guy. I think he's one of the personality-wise, and from the standpoint of being a quality teammate and a quality guy, I think he's in the top 10 or 15% of the guys in that clubhouse in terms of character and the kind of guy you want in your ball club. Hey, but you got to hit, you got to produce, and you have to catch. And it's a very demanding position. I had a wise baseball man once tell me many, many years ago, if you have to have a catcher and a shortstop who have to hit for high average and do a lot of damage, you don't have a very good baseball team. Mm-hmm. Because those are the two positions where you want defense first, and then whatever offense you get's a bonus. The Nats happen to have a shortstop who gives them a lot of bonus in his offense in Trey Turner. So no worries there. But I think, you know, Matt Wieters would be the first one to tell you he has to hit better than he did last year. It looked to me like batting left-handed, all you had to do was flip off speed stuff to him, and you're probably going to get him out. In fact, I was just looking over the scorebook today, because every Friday and Monday on Twitter, I'm tweeting and posting games from the regular season when good things happen.
Right.
And the next one I'm posting this Friday is Matt Wieters walk-off hit at home against the Orioles, which was part of a very cool bottom of the ninth inning where the Nats really needed to beat Baltimore in that one game. Maybe that was the high point of the season,
right,
along with a grand slam he hit in Chicago, I believe it was. And but the Nats, there's no doubt, I'm sure Matt would be the first to tell you, he needs to do more offensively. And it seemed like the pitchers liked throwing to him. And, you know, had a few glitches there in the with pass balls and stuff. And, that you know, the play in the playoffs was brutal. But if the umpires had called it correctly, it wouldn't have even gotten to that point.
Right.
So I think the Nats need a big season for Matt Wieters, whether Jose is the backup or Pedro Severino now finally steps up. Big league ready will remain to be seen, but I do think that is a position where the Nats need improvement.
Bob Carpenter, he's been with the Nationals since 2006. He works for Masson. Bob, thank you so much, and it was a blast being with you.
Hey, Bill, really enjoyed it, man. Thanks for having me on, and I'll look forward to seeing you in West Palm Beach in a couple months.
You got it. Take care.
All right, buddy.
All right.
My final guest is Richard Justice. He gives us the strengths and weaknesses of each club in the AL West.
On the phone is Richard Justice of MLB.com, and I called him to go over the AL West, the needs of each team. And Richard, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Let's start with the Astros. They're the world champions, and they don't seem to need to fix much, but they might need bullpen help, maybe a bench help. What do you think?
Well, I think they do need a left-handed bat with Carlos Beltran retiring. I think they're going to get that by promoting Kyle Tucker, their top prospect, to the big leagues. A couple reasons for that. One, he's ready. I saw him turn on a 102-mile-an-hour fastball in the Futures game. He's one of those guys. Bregman was drafted second in the 15 draft, and Tucker was drafted fifth, and he's ready. And you know what baseball people say, if you have a young guy and he's ready and you don't promote him, it's ruinous. So I know the Astros are being connected with Jay Bruce and other veteran left-handed guys, but I think they're pretty much committed to Kyle Tucker in some role. I don't know how you figure the at-bats, maybe Marwin Gonzalez, DHs some, or you rotate everybody, something like that. The other thing they have to figure out, I don't think their bullpen's in bad shape. It certainly hit a wall last year, but I think you have to figure out, do you trust Ken Giles to pitch the ninth inning? And I don't think they're going to go down that road again. He was erratic last year, even when he was getting things done. So does that mean you try to trade for a Roberto Osuna from the Blue Jays? You see if there's a price there. The price there is probably Kyle Tucker, and I don't think they would do that. That means would the O's trade Zach Britton? Word on the street is that they're, again, willing to discuss that. They need young, controllable pitching. The Astros have all kinds of young, controllable pitching. There's a deal there to be made. So if I had a bet, I would bet that Zach Britton would be the Astros' closer on opening day next year. But, you know, you have free agents. You have Greg Holland, Wade Davis, and Mike Miner's a really intriguing guy. But those are the two things. I think one they'll fill easily internally, and the other they'll go outside and do it. It's somewhat risky to not change the group dynamics more than that. But as long, you know, when you look at their club, infield, right field with Springer, rotation is deep. They have extra bodies in the rotation. There's just not much you'd want to do. Like a lot of other teams, they'd like to have a prime-time young catcher to start working into the mix, and they feel they have a couple of those guys in the minor league. So they're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I mean, they're good enough to repeat for sure. The Angels, you know, they were in the wild card race for a long time, and then they died during the month of September. What did they need to fix?
Well, the main thing they need to fix is to get all their young pitchers back on the mound. And I think if they, you know, if they get a full year out of Garrett Richards, out of Shoemaker, and out of Tyler Skaggs, I think they would feel that they were good enough to compete. Now, re-signing Justin Upton takes care, puts them in a good spot there. You know, considering that their first baseman, Luis Valbuena, can play third, I think they're going to be connected with either Hosmer or Moustakas. And that, you know, as long as they're comfortable with where they're at from a pitching standpoint, and I think they feel like everybody's going to bounce back, that this is going to be Garrett Richards' year to compete for a Cy Young. I mean, he's that good. They're good enough to make the playoffs, and they're good enough. I think they feel like they're pretty close to being good enough to contend for a championship.
How much does Albert Pujols have in the tank?
I don't know. You know, every time you doubt him, he proves all of us wrong. But the fact is, he's an older player now, and he's got, you know, there were, when you watch him run at times, it's painful. There are days, you know, it's like when I think of a Big Poppy, you know, his last year, we're all saying, he's playing so great, why don't we do retire? Well, when you hear him talk about all the things he had to go through to get ready to get his body on the field, and you could watch him run, you understood that he'd squeezed about every ounce of baseball out of his body there is. And so Albert hit 241 last year. He did play 149 games, but grounded into 26 double plays. Things are hard for Albert. But he's such a great one. You know, he's already punched his ticket to the Hall of Fame. I just somehow think with his work ethic and everything, he still has a chance to be productive. And it would be, to me, it would be so cool if, you know, we always talked about, oh, we're going to waste the best years of Mike Trout. Well, I don't want to waste the last years of Albert Pujols either.
Right.
So they're very close to being able to put a competitive team around both those guys.
The Seattle Mariners. Richard, everyone thought they were the team to beat in the West, and it turns out they had too many injuries, too many hitters not producing. It seems like next year they need to stay healthy at least.
Yeah, you know, they went through a big stretch of the season with a AAA rotation. And that said, there were times when King Felix showed his age. Iwakuma showed his age at times. The one thing about them is their general manager, Jerry Depoto, is a deal maker. So they could do a lot. But as they go into the season, you know, Paxton became a top-of-the-rotation guy last year. Mike Leake, King Felix, Ramirez. They have a lot of interesting arms. So, when you look at their roster, you go, I don't really have any questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're pretty good all over, and in the last year of Nelson Cruz's contract, they've got a chance. I think that the AL West is going to be really good, and I think opening day you're going to do the power rankings. You would look at the Astros, the Mariners, and the Angels and say they're all good enough to make the postseason.
Wow. The Rangers, at one minute it looked like they were rebuilding, then they were back in the race, but when it was all said and done, they were out of it. So what can they do to get better? It seems like they need pitching as well.
Yeah, they have Cole Hamels and Martin Perez, and then everybody else, you know, what can they expect of A.J. Griffin, Nick Martinez? Can Matt Bush make the transition to the rotation? There are no questions really about their lineup. They don't know who's going to play center field. Will it be Delino DeShields? Can they afford to go out and get somebody? They got to take care of the pitching. You know, does that mean they want to cut the payroll too? So does that mean they go for one big-ticket guy like Jake Arrieta, who would be coming back to North Texas? He went to college at TCU. His dad's a high school baseball coach, up not too far from Arlington. Or do you just try to spend your money, you know, judiciously on the lower end of the pitchers that are available? You know, like you just say, well, okay, Darvish, Arrieta, Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb, we can't afford those guys. Do you try to have a reunion with Cashner? You know, do you believe in Tillman, Pineda? I don't know what they're going to do. They need some help. You know, and we haven't even got to the bullpen, but I don't think you can even worry about their bullpen or center field. They got to take care of their rotation. So they're going to have to go outside and get at least a couple of starting pitchers.
The Oakland A's, they always trade away players. They look like they're rebuilding for next year, and they like to move to another stadium as well. What can we expect from them?
They finished the season very excited about where they were. And, you know, the Yankees just asked for permission to interview Bob Melvin. And I think the A's feel they got the right guy managing the team. And I think Billy Beane would tell you this hopefully is the last time that this group of young guys with a ballpark now on the horizon in downtown Oakland, that this is an exciting time. And when they got out of last year, what they had from guys like Matt Olson and Matt Chapman, Bruce Maxwell, the young catcher. I think they feel like they've got a group that can contend. You know, it always begins with the pitching. So, Graveman, Cotton, Manaea, they're in a good spot now. They're going to be a very, very young team, and you know, there's always uncertainty when you have a young team because guys like Chapman and Olson, it makes sense they would take a step back. But when you played them down the stretch last year, you looked at all those young guys and said, "This is pretty good." They can now see the future that is bright and sunny skies. I mean, you can project 3 years from now, and Chapman and Olson might be anchors of a whole franchise. That the ballpark is well under construction. You know, to me, it's exciting for downtown Oakland. You'll be able to look across the bay from Laney College there in Lake Merritt and see, you know, the Giants and the A's can keep an eye on each other in more ways than one. I'm very bullish on where the A's are as an organization.
Bob Melvin is an underrated manager. I mean, the one thing about him is that you know they're not going to lose 100 games. They're going to be competitive, and he's won Manager of the Year once before, but I really respect the job he does.
There's no better human being in the game. There's no guy more respected by his players. He's a funny guy. He's a self-deprecating guy. And you know what, Bill? He's an Oakland guy. The only poster on his wall in his office is of a Who concert at the Oakland Coliseum, I think in 1970 or something. And he lives, his home is right above the Claremont Hotel, but he is an Oakland guy. He wants to be there, and the uniform means something to him. So this has been a tough ride to bring players to a certain point, like a Josh Donaldson, and then have to trade the player away.
Right.
And I think Billy believes that we're not going to have to do that anymore, that we now have the money to keep this group of players together and contend, and they believe in Bob Melvin. And everyone who's known Bob Melvin, covered him as a player as I did, played with him, managed against him, there will be a lot of people happy that Bob Melvin can be the guy to get the A's back to the postseason.
Richard Justice, listen, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Bill.